Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Fides Club. I'm your host, Patrick Beja, and this is episode number 14 for June 2009. Hello and welcome to the Fides Club, the show where we get people from around the world to tell you what they saw in the news from the past month. So we get news and, more importantly, opinion from around the world. So I think today we are going to be focusing a little bit more on the events in Iran. But before we get into the show, it might take up the whole show, possibly. We'll see how it goes. But before we do that, I'll introduce our panel today. We have, of course, the inimitable Turkey, who is with us and who doesn't really need an introduction. How are you doing?
Hi, everybody. I'm doing great.
You, every time we do the show, you sound a little bit more asleep, like from month to month.
Well, I start asleep, then I slowly wake up. Just okay. Give me some time.
We'll say something to upset you, and then you'll wake up and yell.
Oh, trust me. I'm gonna rant like crazy on Sarkozy this time.
Great. We also have Julio, who was here a few episodes ago, who is this strange mix of Netherlands and Argentina.
Let's just make it simple and call it Argentina.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
You're Hi, Patrick. Doing okay?
Yes. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for the invitation again. I'm here in the Netherlands enjoying this summer days with 20 degrees Celsius, raining, and really, really humid. So I'm very happy.
So basically, you're at the opposite from Turkey, who I guess is having 40 degrees Celsius and incredibly dry.
43.
Yes. 43. Holy crap. Okay. Well, so thank you guys for being here. And we also have a very special guest today. Neda is here. And she will be the center of our discussions, I think, because she is an Iranian national who is now residing in Paris, who has been residing in Paris for a few years, actually. How are you doing, Neda? Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm good. Paris, the weather is pretty good. And we've been following the news. Everybody's been following the news for the last 2 weeks.
Of course.
So newspapers, everything. And we're in touch with Iran.
Well, you know what? Let's get right into it. I said that at the beginning of the intro that we would be talking about Iran a lot, and let's not waste too much time.
And I thought we're going to talk about Michael Jackson, not Iran anymore.
Well, that's pretty much what's been happening in France, in Paris, in the news. There's just Michael Jackson. Although, you know what? It might be interesting to talk about him, too. We'll see if we have time. But first, about Iran, so that we get a sense of where you're coming from and context, for you, Neda, could you please tell us a little bit of your story when you arrived in France and what's your relationship with your country at the moment, so that we understand your comments later on?
Well, a lot of, everything happened during 1979 when the regime was changed. A lot of Iranians left the country to go and live in Europe, Canada, Australia, and other European countries. And that's when I arrived to Paris. Having said that, I did live in London for about 7 years before Paris. But France has been my hometown for the last, since 1981. I'm in touch. I go back to Iran every 3 months. I've been around Iran quite a few times, from north to south, and I'm in touch all the time, my friends, cousins, and I was there about 2 months ago.
Okay, so obviously in the past few weeks, you must have had a lot of contact with your family and your friends from Tehran. Your family is in Tehran, is it?
It's absolutely. Not in everybody's in Tehran, yes.
Okay. So let's, you know what, for in case some of the listeners don't know what's been happening in Iran, or, you know, I bet a lot of people know that there's events and riots and stuff like that happening. Maybe they don't have the exact story of why everything's been happening. Could you give us a recap?
I don't think, Patrick, anybody listening to this show doesn't know what's going on there.
Well, I'd still like to have a little bit, a recap from an Iranian. Well, let's hear what you how you would tell the story, Neda.
Well, when I was there about 2 months ago, everybody was getting very excited about the presidency, and everybody was talking about the presidency of Iran. So it's you know, and when I was there, I noticed that everybody was going to vote. Having said that, one of the major elements that you notice in Iran, everything is getting very, very expensive, very, very extremely expensive all over Iran. It's not about Tehran. And we did have 29% of inflation this year. So everybody was looking forward to that, to the changement of the government.
And so, of course, the when the election happened, there was a popular movement that said that Ahmadinejad, who won officially the election, was not the one they actually voted for, and they started these protests. I'm reluctant to call it a revolution because we don't really know yet, but they started protesting very strongly. And can you tell us why they thought that the election was rigged? Because it could have been that he actually won. I mean, he does have support in the country, right? Especially
well,
in the countryside.
Absolutely. I mean, he does have support. I mean, you know, nobody denies that. 2 hours after the vote, Mr. Mousavi did receive a fax, you know, saying that he had a lot of people were voting for him. He did receive that fax. But the very strange thing was, in Azerbaijan, where Mr. Mousavi was born, and he is from Azerbaijan, suddenly we hear the news that he lost. Azerbaijan is like, if I tell you, like, some colored people in America didn't vote for Obama. It is impossible anywhere, but not in Azerbaijan. In Tehran as well, everybody was for Mousavi. So it was very, very strange, and people came out spontaneously saying, it is impossible. Where did our vote go?
Right, you know? Which is when we started hearing, where is my vote?
Because exactly, where is my vote? Because people really did come out all over Iran. I'm not talking about Tehran. All over Iran, this is impossible. Not Azerbaijan, not Tehran. Especially these two cities.
Okay.
So everything, I mean, everybody started walking very, very slowly. They didn't have any arms, they didn't have any knives, nothing. Where did my vote go?
Right. So that was the first couple of days when that happened. It was around the weekend around June 12th and a few days after that. Of course, we started hearing about this in France and in other countries very soon after that. And The reports in I think in France and the U.S. at least were very cautious, saying that they didn't take a lot of implication with the Iranian people who were protesting. So they were saying, well, we support the will of the people, but we don't know what's happened, and it's it's an election. And if there was a problem, then it might be a problem. But they didn't come out in strong support against Ahmadinejad, at least in France, and I think it's safe to say the U.S., in the first few days. I'd like to hear from Julio, because I'm guessing that it was the same in Argentina.
Well, it was the same here in the Netherlands.
Okay.
very, very cautious because, yeah, it is an election and you don't really know what's happening. Also, I think what is very interesting about this is that how the news was spread to us via the internet as well.
Right.
On a globalized way. And I remember that, well, I hate talking about Twitter because it's everywhere, but Twitter played a centralized role on how we found out about what was going on in Iran.
Absolutely, yeah. There was the whole, we're not going to get too much into it, but there was the whole CNN fail story where Twitter was breaking the news and CNN was playing reruns of Larry King doing whatever. Well, that's a complicated issue because CNN needs to check the sources, but they would have needed to at least mention the fact that it was going on, and Twitter and other social networks were going on like crazy. But we might have a chance to go back to that a little bit later. What I'm interested to know also here is Turkey, because obviously Saudi Arabia is an Islamic country, and so is Iran. So I'm curious to know if they came out in support of Ahmadinejad just automatically because, you know, they have a lot in common religion-wise.
There's nothing in common between Iran and Saudi Arabia, even religion-wise.
They're both Islamic countries.
No, Sunnis don't consider Shias Muslims and Shias don't consider Sunnis Muslim. There's a huge hatred between the two sects.
Right.
And Iran is basically an enemy to Saudi Arabia as a concept. Politically, we have good relationships at the moment, but on a social level, we don't like each other in general.
So do you mean to say that the government of Saudi Arabia didn't support the election of Ahmadinejad at first? What did they say? What was their official response?
Saudi Arabia does not usually never interferes in any domestic affairs of any country, even if it's an enemy country, like considering Iran in a way. But they have showed the only response Saudi Arabia had was the sadness of the movement against protesters in Iran. So beyond that, there's no official reaction to the matter.
So you mean the movement against the protesters was condemned by Saudi Arabia? So they were supporting the protesters, is what you're saying?
It's not exactly supporting the protesters. It's more not supporting the violence against the protesters. As I said, it's a very complicated relationship. Like, even in Saudi Arabia in general, people here didn't really care much of what's going on in Iran. Because, as I said, there's this whole religion conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And most people really doesn't matter for them who wins or who loses in Iran, because they see them all as the same. And we also need to remember what's going on in Iran. It's not anti-revolutionary, which is against the Islamic revolution. It's just against the voting. So we still have a similar government. It's going to take, whether it's Ahmadinejad or Mousavi, it's going to be basically the same, but there's going to be some openness. That's from Mousavi against Ahmadinejad, who's an extremist. So, but basically the government as a concept, as ideology, it's going to be the same either way.
Right. That's something that a lot of people tend to forget, which is both major candidates, Mousavi and Ahmadinejad, were approved by the clerics. So then I'm going to go back to Neda. How different is it really? Because we sort of get a feeling of they are fighting against the establishment being the oppressive religious authority. Is that really what's happening there, or what
well,
exactly?
Well, actually, I'm going to interfere just by Tufik that saying that the Iranians, they don't consider the Saudians. You don't have anything in common. Our language is different. Our history is different. It is true that Iran has got 7 years of history, one of the heart of the cultures of Mesopotamian and the Persian Empire. I agree with that. But having said that, the Iranians, they don't consider the Arab words as Muslims, that's not true. It's like saying a Catholic doesn't consider a Protestant a Christian. It's just it's Islamic, but they're just two different parts.
And so maybe Turkey was talking about the way Saudi Arabia sees Iran, maybe?
Yeah, saying that we don't consider the Muslim Saudians as Muslims. Yes, we do consider them as Muslims. Of course we do, and we have a lot of respect for them, for the people. Now, if the government has another attitude towards the governments, it's different, but not the people. Iran has been, they've been living with the Armenians, with the Jews. It's a country of tolerance for many centuries. And the Iranian people, they don't have anything against the Arab world. I mean, you know, they are Sunnis and we are Shiis. But doesn't mean we don't consider them as Muslims. That's not true. Now, having said Ahmadinejad, as I told you before, Ahmad, since he's here, we had about 40% of inflation. I mean, even my redfish governs the country better than Ahmadinejad, you know. So people just, they don't want to, they just, at the first place, they didn't vote for him. They just voted for somebody else. That was the first step. Now, they want Mousavi because Mousavi has criticized Ahmadinejad in different positions, you know, especially on Ahmadinejad's attitudes towards the Western countries and towards Israel. Mousavi did criticize Ahmadinejad. And basically, if Ahmadinejad stays in the country, rules the country, I don't know economically where will we go. Iran is the fourth producer of petrol, and we don't have any refineries in Iran. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, when we were preparing the show, you told me that something that I didn't suspect actually, which was the revolution now is actually going on because of the election, of course, but mostly because of economic reasons.
Absolutely, economically, absolutely. I mean, 30% of inflation, it is so much. I mean, you go out, every day the prices are going up. 60% of Iran, they're less than 30 years old. So what it is, every day, you don't have any freedom, the prices are going up. So obviously, you don't have, you know, you just come out. You just come out. You want to tell them, hey, what's going on? You don't give us anything. Everything is going up. You have no freedom. No universities are getting full. Even the music. I mean, the minimum human liberty, we don't have it. Listening to some music outside in the street, in a car, we can have the police behind us. It is true that Ahmadinejad they finance the Hezbollah. A lot of our money is going towards Hezbollah. Against the terrorism, you know, financing the terrorism. And this is very, very important. Economically, Iran is going down the drain.
That's right. I mean, my first thought, maybe because I'm very Europe-centric, was for the European Union and the economical sanctions that were put in place. And I thought, of course, we always joke that economical sanctions don't have any effect and they're useless. And when Iran said, I mean, Ahmadinejad says this or that, we're going to toughen the economical sanctions, blah, blah, blah. And now apparently what you're telling us is that the economical sanctions indirectly led to the people revolting.
Oh, absolutely, Patrick. The thing is, with economic sanctions, everything, I mean, in Iran, you can find everything. They come towards Dubai, but the prices are 7 times more, 8 times more, certain things. They come through China because they continue to work with us. They continue to come towards Russia, from Russia as well. But, I mean, when Ahmadinejad says all his propaganda about the Muslims, he doesn't make the smallest move for the Chechen. Why? Because they're next to the Russians. So it's kind of a permanent hypocrite. So what if people today, they don't have any choice. Today they say, okay, we don't want Ahmadinejad. Let's see what Mousavi can do for us.
And how do you see Mousavi? Because I think a lot of people in Europe or in France think that Mousavi see him as a more Western voice. But how Western can he be if he is chosen by the clerics? By Western, I mean, you know, more moderate, and I think people understand what I'm saying. But.
Well, the fact is, today, that Iran doesn't have any choice economically. They have to start working with the Western people. And the clerics, if they continue their way as they are, they will be disappeared because the country can't take it anymore. And they are beginning to be divided in two parts. There is Mousavi with Rafsanjani. Having said that, remain in mind that Rafsanjani is one of the richest men in Iran and doesn't get along at all with Ahmadinejad. And when he became president from Qom, Qom is the holy city of Iran, nobody congratulated Ahmadinejad, apart from Khamenei, the guy. So nobody has congratulated him, no one. So they are beginning to be divided into several parts now. And the show goes on behind the curtains.
So what you're saying is that the clerics themselves are divided. Some of them are, well, at least Khamenei is supporting Ahmadinejad, and Rafsanjani is supporting Mousavi.
Absolutely.
And so they're divided. There are two factions in the church.
Exactly. And they know, and which was never happened before. They were pretty united. I mean, you know, but now Rafsanjani's daughter and family were in jail for a few hours, a few days ago. They were freed because Rafsanjani remains a very, very powerful man in Iran. And it's not only about Iran, because if anything happens with it, that's Islamic image, a lot of things can change in the Middle East.
Of course.
Don't forget Lebanon with the Hezbollah. Don't forget Yemen. So it's very, very delicate right now, the Iran situation.
Right. It's interesting that in France, I don't think in the news we got any reports of that aspect of the conflict. I mean, we didn't hear about the clerics being divided at all, which is surprising because it seems like a big component of the issue. What about you guys? Did you hear about this?
No, I did not hear about this, but maybe it's something that is very controlled from the news point of view for Iran. I guess they don't want to show if there is such a divide in their clerical system.
Well, I don't know. I would think that the experts on the country, in our countries, in France and Netherlands and anywhere, would know what the conflict was about. And it's curious, we didn't hear about the clerical, not schism, but, you know, factions, and we didn't hear about the economical origins of the revolution. It was very much played out as a political movement, which it is, of course. I'm not saying it's not, but the fact that the economical aspect of the Iranian life played a part into it was not shown at all.
Actually, all the big media have covered it very clearly about the conflict within the clerics and about the economy. However, they didn't highlight...
Not in France.
I'm saying all the major media, which is in English. I don't speak French, so I don't...
Well, there you go.
I don't know about French media. I'm just talking about like CNN, BBC, New York Times. Like these three did cover these aspects. But on a base, but they didn't put it in the headlines. So unless you read the whole article, you really don't get to know about what's going on.
Right.
But I mean, Patrick, when I was in Iran 2 months ago, right now, as a fourth producer of oil, you go into the gas station. You wait for 1 hour to put gas into your car. It is amazing. People work, everybody works, they have two jobs, they work 12 hours a day. I mean, how long can you can't take it. Nothing.
In prep, you were telling me that the average salary was around 400 euros.
And they have to make it two, so make it 800, 900, and they have to live in the same house. And every day, it's like...
Average cost of living is around 1,000 euros.
Absolutely. And don't forget, Iran is not only about oil. It's a country with natural resources and agriculture. I can tell you, Iran, it's a perfect country for agriculture, from tobacco to tea, to all different fruits. Iran has everything. In some countries, they just have natural resources. But for Iran, it's everything. So people, they're not blind. I mean... They know that a country like that, it's just crazy with that economic aspect of it.
And I'm sorry,
it must be very bothering when you consider a country that's considered one of the top oil exporters and producers in the world, and its entire population has to rationize oil for their car gas, and they have to get cards from the government, which gives them permission to I don't know how many liters every month, so they don't really have freedom to fuel their cars.
Absolutely. So you see, so when people, that's it. So you can take it 1 year, you take it 2 years, you take it three, and it's been 30 years. But since Ahmadinejad, 29% on inflation, people from north to south, from east to west, enough is enough. Right. And the very sad thing, I can tell you something, those who had faith in Islam, people are losing it. Because of those kind of governments who've been governing our country for the last 30 years. They're losing faith in Islam.
And yeah, I was saying, Turkey, the amount of annoyance or being fed up that we hear in Neda's voice, I don't think it was accurately reported in the media. Maybe if you dig into the articles, you can see the cold facts that the country economics are in jeopardy. But you don't feel like this is a major fueling force behind the revolution. I didn't see it like that at all. But
well, I can't really say exactly where I got this impression. But I clearly did get the impression that the whole problem was based on economics, and then the very unbelievable inflation rate in the country, and people are just fed up with that. I can't say exactly how I got this information because I've been reading too much stuff, so I don't know where the source. But
Just better informed than I am. That's very possible too.
It's possible, but that's the conclusion I did get. And as I said earlier, clearly the revolution was not anti-Islamic revolution. It was anti-Ahmadinejad.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so the situation continued to escalate over the days and the weeks and the past few weeks. And the other question I would have is, basically, what the protesters are asking is for a vote recount, a complete recount, which would mean very possibly.
Actually, they're demanding that the entire election be cancelled and done all over again.
That's what they're asking now. But at first, it was a recount, right?
No. From the beginning, he demanded that the election be canceled. And the funny part is the way the government is insisting that the election was fair and there were nothing wrong about it. At the same time, they tell people, well, we did find out that some cities had people vote more than registered voters were voting. So I really don't know how it's considered a fair election when they're confessing that there are a lot of votes that were not registered and they voted and they were counted.
From
Azerbaijan when he's born, I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. They said, I mean, you know, this is a flower of the flower, as they say. I mean, you know, they say, oh, no, he didn't. Ahmadinejad won. Yeah. I mean, anywhere, not Tehran and Azerbaijan. What is this? 2 hours? Later, they were saying 63% and 60%. I mean, they just love that two numbers, 63. Yeah. But right now, a lot of people, the human being basic right, they've just destroyed it. People, they were just walking in the street peacefully with no arms, with no knives, and they were getting killed. 60% of Iran is less than 30 years old. They killed mothers, daughters, kids, students. Right now, they want Khamenei, Ahmadinejad to leave. They don't want them anymore.
Right. Well, that's what I was getting at, actually, which is what the protesters want is for Ahmadinejad and Khamenei, in a sense, to abdicate the power that they have. So I don't see how there can be a solution to this situation, because will they ever say, well, okay, that was, you know, we yield to the people and we're going to go away. Sorry, goodbye. Is that conceivable?
Well,
actually,
I mean,
there is there is a movement within the clerks at the moment and in the council, the Islamic Council, where they are, there are some people there who are actually seriously considering removing Khamenei by officially. So we don't know until we things settle down more.
Absolutely. It's, we're talking now, and now the future will tell us how these things will go on. The fact is, if this continues, all the religious and clerics will be disappeared, not probably this week, not in a month, but soon enough, this cannot continue. People will be out there. There is, and, you know, I've had an email from a student saying, you know, if this is life, I don't want to live anymore, so I better die. There is, you know, when you're 20, 25, you get up in the morning, you know, you want to have hope, you want to have a right job, you want to have the minimum freedom, which we don't have it. Iran, a country with literature, poetry, writers, music, nothing. We're not, I mean, you know, they're trying to cut all that off, especially Khamenei and Ahmadinejad.
How are you communicating with your families and friends in Tehran? Are the phone lines working all the time? Do you use the internet or Twitter
work.
Or
the Twitter and mobile doesn't work, and of course all the phones, they're bugged, you know. So we, you know, be very, very careful how everything goes. I mean, everybody, they can come in any office, any second, any day, and they can break everything, and you don't have a life anymore. With Basiji, they are known as Gestapos in Iran, and nothing can stop them. They just come and they destroy.
You could conceivably have someone knock at your door because you talked about, I don't know, organizing a protest, come at your door the day before and come and take you off to some
Absolutely.
Prison somewhere?
And sometimes, you know, we haven't even done anything. The problem, that's it. And it's that psychology, you know, they just play with your mind. And they've been doing that. And but, you know, there is a saying in Persian saying that, you know, if this is life, might as well die. But we will fight to get our votes back. And today, Neda has become the icon of Iran. And all the people who've lost their life, people are in the street, that they will continue this way. Probably not this month, but soon enough, they will be out there again.
Right, Neda is of course the woman who was killed during a protest.
Absolutely.
Right, she died. There was someone who was filming with his mobile phone, and the clip, of course, I'm sure you've seen it already. It was very brutal and very unsettling. I guess every revolution needs a symbol. Was she instrumental in the reinvigorating of the movement?
Well, she did. She has become the icon because now the meaning of Neda, it means a message, a way which you will take the way of your life. And the way she was filmed touched everybody. I mean, a lot of people all around the world, I think they had tears in their eyes what they saw. And she has become a Che Guevara somewhere on the line, yes. Mm.
How do you see, because now we're, of course, with the death of Michael Jackson, I think the news has been refocusing on that, unfortunately. And maybe we feel like the situation has settled down a little bit in Iran.
Didn't you hear Ahmadinejad had a huge party when he heard Michael Jackson died?
Well, I'm sure he did. It's
my God. I mean, Ahmadinejad doesn't even know what drums is. My
God. Oh no, he's just happy that Michael Jackson is moving Iran out of the headlines.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Iranians are very, very sad about Michael Jackson. I mean, he is a hero. I mean, you know, everybody loves his music, especially Iranians. I mean, they've had so many. History of music, his, you know, and respect. So we only have respect for him. But we know that it's part of the game, you know, and it's fair enough that every, you know, people talk about Michael Jackson because he was unique and a genius. But I think history will go on and we will see that the Iranians will get their votes back and a lot of other rights,
well,
which they lost.
the situation now, at least as seen from France, is pretty much stale. And what we think, we're not hearing about it anymore, and we don't really know what's happening. So where do you, what's the situation now today in the streets of Tehran, and where do you see it coming in the coming days and weeks?
Well, Basij is there. The Basiji people, who are the Gestapo's, they are there. They're very, very, you know, it is very calm, which is very normal. They, I mean, you know, that's the way it should go. But as I was telling you before, we will see. I don't think Rafsanjani, I don't think Mousavi, I don't think other clerics will let it down. The things will go on, but behind the curtains.
So you think the popular uprising is finished?
No, it's not finished. It's just a question of time. Just time. Matter of, not days probably, but week, months probably. But they will be out there again. As I was telling you, today we've got 30% of inflation. If it goes up to 50, you will be having more people out there. Much more than, much more. You know, when you don't have anything to eat, when you don't have the minimum freedom, but you come out. You come out. You have nothing more to lose.
Of course. Julio was saying before, I forgot what I was saying. sorry about this. Yes,
I didn't say much, so yes, that you should be easy.
You were talking about Twitter. We've heard a lot about Twitter and the role of the social networking and stuff like that. What role did it actually have in your relationship with it, and you, from what you can gather, for as a force to you know, to fuel the revolution and the movement there in the country itself? Hello?
You're talking to Julio, aren't you?
No, sorry, I was asking you, Meda.
Oh. Could you repeat that? Because I had problems with my...
No, I was just asking because we heard a lot about Twitter and the fact that everyone was Twittering, and then people were asking questions, is it really effective? Or how effective was it, and how instrumental it, Twitter and other social networking sites?
Fabulous. It was fabulous because that was the only... I mean, it was... I can't tell you how... good it was for the Iranians inside of Iran, how we gave them courage outside for the media, giving the information to the whole planet that we were not the country for which the last 30 years people had, the planet had the impression that we were some fanatics and wanting to kill the whole world, the Americans, the Europeans. Iran showed the whole planet that it's the country of tolerance and they want to be free. They want a life just like any other human being having a normal life. And it was, it just showed how communication is perfect. And it goes on. That's you know, Twitter. Everybody's in touch with Twitter, internet,
Facebook,
photos,
and, yeah,
everything.
I wanted to comment just a little bit on this Twitter thing. I won't call it funny, but noticeable story is that I think Twitter had a planned maintenance, you know, shutting down the servers. And I think it was the Department of State of the U.S. asked Twitter to delay the maintenance for a few more hours to get more intelligence on this. On what was going on.
Yeah, and to allow the Iranian people to organize and communicate via this network also, because it was the middle of the day for them. But I'm going back to my previous question. Did they actually use Twitter as a way to communicate and organize themselves? Or
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you had people in, let's say, in street, which is called A, and suddenly they would say, okay, all the police are in street A, so go into the street C. That's how they communicated with each other. That's the way that a lot of people's lives were saved, actually, or how they gathered together. Because there was no, you know, the movement was very, very spontaneous. Everybody came out of the, you know, out of a reaction, and they can gather together, you know, through this communication.
Right.
And like the student in Shiraz will say, okay, we started it right now. So Isfahan will say, okay, we are there too.
Okay.
And it just went on all over Iran.
What about that movement of Twitter, green Twitter avatars thing that people are doing to show their support to Iran? A lot of people are saying it's completely useless, or if you want to show your support, you should write your elected representative and tell them that you're concerned, and that's the way you actually influence things. But the Twitter avatar, green Twitter avatar things are useless. What do you think about that?
What personal thing? I think, you know, whenever you make a move, a lot of people will say always useless. I mean, when Gandhi started walking to free India, a lot of people said the same thing, saying you're going to walk, it's going to be useless. India is never going to be free. So this kind of comment doesn't mean much, you know. And if it does give courage to the others, because it's a movement and they recognize each other, that's good enough. But I mean, you know, you always have a lot of people saying it's useless. But, you know, life goes on, and Gandhi did get India back, and we will get our vote back.
Okay, well, that's what we hope happens. Julio and Turkey, you've been very good and very quiet. I want to give you the opportunity to say something, if you have any comments before we move on to another topic.
Well, no, first of all, I think it's a bit intimidating for me to speak in front of Neda or Turkey.
Intimidating in front of Neda, I can understand, but scary in front of Turkey, yeah, that
would... Yeah, you can put it that way. No, it's just that I find the conversation so interesting and so far that all I can think of to contribute is just asking more questions to Neda. I wanted to ask her if what's her opinion, and this is more not so much about the elections, but what's her opinion about if she sees any possibility in the future to, instead of just choosing candidates selected by the religious control organization of the country, if there is any chance that in the future the country will have a government with no religious intervention?
You know, Iran, it's a very, very delicate question you're asking, because Iran is an Islamic country, and people of Iran, I'm talking, you know, it's I want to, you know, it's very, I don't want to make any propaganda on that. For the time being, Iran wants a republic, Islamic republic, but somebody who is open to Western world. Okay? And, you know, because Iran is Persia, because of 7,000 years of civilization, because for many centuries we did work with these Western countries, why not? I can say why not. But people of Iran, they might be Muslim, but they're not fanatics, you know? And you have them everywhere. You've got them as in medical parts of the United States. You've got them in literature. You have them in NASA in the United States. We've got a lot of engineers who work for them. And Iranians are very, very open people. That's the Iranians. I'm talking to you about the population of Iran. But if there is a top of the republic, Islamic, but open-minded, why not?
So maybe so we can get a clearer idea of what Mousavi would be like, can you tell us exactly, like give us specific examples of what it would be like if Mousavi came into power, if the people got what they wanted?
Well, I mean, I think Mr. Mousavi has heard the message. Mr. Mousavi should take care of the really major problems of Iran, which is the young people, the education, and economically. And they need freedom. They need that freedom. And I think today, if the message has been heard, he knows that he's got to could take care of it, because if not, they're going to be out there again.
I mean, but specifically, what would he change? So we can hear the like specific examples. What would he change in today's regime, and what would he make a gesture towards that youth in Iran that started the revolution?
I think first of all, he will have much more peaceful statements towards the Western countries, which Ahmadinejad apparently the guy hasn't got anything better to do instead of going out there insulting the whole planet. I think that's the first thing, to have, you know, to go towards the Western countries peacefully. And going on about the atomic approach, which is very, should be very peacefully, not aiming to destroy any country. I think that's the first thing he might probably do. And, you know, he has had a, he's an architect. He's had a, he's very into art. And, which, you know, which means he's intellectual. I don't know if Ahmadinejad has ever read a book in his life, entire life. I mean, he's the president of country. He can't even talk.
So that reminds me of a certain U.S. president before Obama.
You see, but Ender, we do need an intellectual person at the head of the country.
But when you say that he is against everyone in the Western side of the world, I understand he has a good relationship with Chavez. Is that correct?
Yeah,
Chavez,
but, I mean,
from Venezuela.
Venezuela, but when Ahmadinejad does his statements, is always destroying. You know, it's always negative. In none of the cases, he does have a positive approach. It's always, okay, we are the best, so we're gonna destroy X or Y, you know. But I mean, Iranian problems are much more important. It has to be positive. It's got to be. We've got to rebuild the country. 10 years of war of Iran with Iraq. 1 million people died during the war. The Persian Gulf has to be built again. We don't have refineries. All this, they've got to take care of it.
Well, that's
drugs
the great...
in Iran. Drugs. We've got 900 kilometers of frontiers with Afghanistan. Drugs are everywhere in Iran. Opium. And these are all the major problems of Iran today.
That's the great irony and the great frustration that you're expressing. It's the fact that Iran actually has everything to build a successful society and a rich community, and it's such a waste that's happening now. So, of course, we can understand the frustration of the people. Turkey, do you have any comments you want to add before we move on?
Well, I don't really have any comments, but I do like that since Julio mentioned president of the U.S., it's finally nice to see a reaction from a U.S. president that says, well, that's let the people take care of it instead of sending your army in and deciding, you know what, let's do it.
Well, it's fabulous.
How would you think Bush would have handled this?
Oh my God.
Bush would have been horrible. He would have attacked Ahmadinejad. He would have threatened. He would have moved forces in the Gulf. It would have been a disaster.
And the worst part
of something doing like this, like you need to look at it in the smart way. Sending American forces, if the president threatened the Iran, sent armed forces, it might turn against them because Iranians are very proud people. They might actually end up supporting Ahmadinejad at the end just because of their pride. They don't like people to interfere.
Absolutely.
Okay, just before I'm going to take the opposite view on this and think that Bush could not have sent anyone anywhere because he's already in Iraq and Afghanistan. And Obama, even if he had wanted to, he couldn't have because he already has two fronts that he has to take care of. So, you know, I don't think the situation would have been very different if Bush had been president. Maybe diplomatically it would have been a little bit a different approach, but I'm not even certain about that.
Whether he invades the country or not, I'm not talking. The fact is, Bush would have put his army on the borders in Iraq. He would have put ships in the Gulf at least.
No,
he would have been threatening. He would have done that.
Maybe.
Bush is a guy who all he cares about is money, and he just wants all of that oil wherever it is because he owns most of the shares in all of those corporations.
I'm sorry, Patrick, for that question. I didn't know it was going to unleash Turkey.
No, that's what we wait for. Everyone's expecting Turkey to go off on something. If it doesn't happen in one episode, we get angry emails. But maybe one last...
I'm going to add up that right now, Mr. Mousavi had told Ahmadinejad and Khamenei that he was very, very... worried about what was going on in Pakistan, and that Al-Qaeda was about 100 kilometers away from Islamabad. And the Americans are aware of that, what's going on in Afghanistan and Pakistan. They know that fanatics, it's got to end. It has to end. And Mr. Mousavi is aware of that, that it's very, because Pakistan is just our frontiers. And Afghanistan too, you know, and we've got two countries next to us, which are very, very dangerous, politically speaking, with that.
Maybe another question that I would like to ask you is, how do you think it touches on something that Turkey was saying, but how do you think the people would react if Western forces said, listen, to Mousavi directly, obviously, the election was rigged. I'm talking theoretically, right? It's science fiction here, but they go to Mousavi and they tell him the election was rigged. Do you want, let's not say the U.S., but let's say the U.N. Do you want the U.N. to intervene and to enter the country and to, you know, make sure that the next election goes well, or to force another election on the country, on the authorities? How do you think the people would react to such a proposal?
Well, I do agree with my friend that the Iranians, they don't want any interference of the Western countries inside of Iran. They will take care of it. What will happen, it will be inside of Iran. Every time a foreign country has interfered in Middle East, it just wasn't the right thing. What will happen will be happening inside of Iran. The Iranians, they don't want any Western interference inside of their lands right now.
I wanted to
give you something, that Iran was a never a colony. I mean, you know, it's one of the few countries in that subject which has never been a colony. And it is true that Persians, they are very, very proud, you know. And it is good that Mr. Obama has that attitude, you know, because the movement was from our generation, nothing to do with the outside countries.
It's true that, you know, again, it's something that's surprisingly consistent with the UN's attitude, as we were talking before, for the economic sanctions. Here, the UN would probably not enter the country just like that. And it's being faulted for that many times. People say, well, they're useless and they don't actually act up on anything. But here, apparently, it would be a bad move. So that's one for the UN.
Yes, you are. You know, it's an Islamic country, the Islamic government. And, you know, it's just going to be real bloodshed with the besiege. I mean, I can't, you know, it's impossible. I can't even imagine the situation. First of all, the Iranians, I don't think, I don't think they will have... They will not allow that, you know.
Of course, yeah. I wasn't speaking let's do it, but I was thinking how would the reaction be if that was proposed, and that's why I said science fiction.
Yeah, because last time, you know, with the revolution, Jimmy Carter and all that, they've had a bad experience, you know. So let it be in their hands this time, I guess. That's what they should say them to themselves, I guess, you know.
That's what I was going to comment. There have been Western interventions before in Iran, and like Neha said, they were not very well received. If you are going to put a dictator on charge, it's like what happened in most of Latin America. And I think there is another big difference in between when we say, okay, let's intervene in, I don't know, one African country that is having a major civil war and the government is killing thousands of people and there are no rights, no human rights for anyone. Well, that you might need to intervene there, but Iran is completely different. These are people that can vote, and most of the Iranians I know are just brilliant people. They are intellectuals. And let's face it, it's one of the countries with the oldest history in the planet. So it's not that they are just beginners, you know, and in this as a country. And they should have the right to solve it amongst themselves. Well, they can vote, so that shows something. Okay, we are discussing if the vote has been rigged or not, but yeah, they exactly. had the right to vote.
I mean, there were talks of having people watching the elections in the U.S. even to make sure that there were no irregularities. So anyway, that was just a theoretical discussion. Okay, you know what? Let's move on to maybe one other story before we finish the show, because we've spent almost an hour on Iran. And that's, as we were saying before, the Michael Jackson story has been eclipsing the Iranian Revolution story, which I'm curious to know exactly to what extent it was covered in each of your countries. In France, I can tell you that for the past 24 hours, we're recording on Saturday, and the Michael Jackson died on Thursday night in the U.S. So it's been roughly 30 hours, I guess. In the past 30 hours, we've had nothing but Michael Jackson on every channel, everywhere. I don't think I've ever seen that much. It's been only him, and everything else in any news about anything anywhere has been hardly even mentioned. Which, if I can interject a slight personal opinion here, there's a right amount and there's a wrong amount, and well, maybe not wrong, but that's too much. I mean, I can understand maybe doing a special, like half the newscast is going to be dedicated to Michael Jackson, but that went a little bit too far. And I'm very sad for music, but for us, I was craving for some news about Iran, for example. What's been happening? All of a sudden, Iran doesn't exist anymore. That was a little bit frustrating. What about you, Turkey? Michael Jackson fan?
Nope. I'm no fan of Michael Jackson at all. And I do feel sorry that he's dead, but personally, I don't have any respect for him. And I'm just so annoyed, and from all the coverage he's getting, like, it's unbelievable. The entire internet almost crashed. And the news is everywhere, even in Arab news. It's just giving me a huge headache.
So the it was a huge deal in the Arab world also?
Yeah, it was huge here. At least on the internet, news sites. I don't watch TV much, so I'm not sure about the news. But like Al Arabiya, their website had like five stories all about Michael Jackson's death.
Right. Well, to be completely honest, I have to say I don't think there was another person in the world who had so much reach in his time. But yeah, so it's I'm saying it's understandable that he would be his death would be reported on everywhere. But anyway, Neda, I heard yes. that we were talking about the fact that Ahmadinejad must have been really happy that the coverage was going to switch from the Iranian situation to Michael Jackson. I'm sure there is some truth to that joke, but I've also heard that the national channels were planning some sort of Lord of the Rings marathon on TV, and that was seen as a plan to get people into their homes and out of the streets. And I think it was on Buzz Out Loud at some point. But how about that Michael Jackson situation? How did it go in Iran? Do you know?
In Iran, it's people. Because we're not allowed to have certain theaters, or it's not really free on movies, on cinemas, and everything. And but the Iranians, they love the music. So a lot of times when you go back home, you put your TV on, which we're not allowed to, but everybody has got cable TVs. And music plays a big, big part of Iranians' people. And they have a lot of knowledge. I mean, I was amazed to go to some part of Iran from the South Persian Gulf, and people were saying Spanish music, South American music, or South American writers, or, you know, the things that I never thought. Because it's always an underground life they have. They have one life, which is street life. Obviously, you've got to put your chador on your head, and you've got to go on with the regime because you've got to be in, you know, you have to, you have no choice. Then you have another part, which is your underground home life. You come home, you know, the latest music and everything. And Michael Jackson, throughout these 30 years, did play a part, because it's not about Michael Jackson, it's about his music. It's all about influence of music and videos. And everybody talks about it, yes, because, you know, when you come home during the war, when the bombs were bombing and everything, everybody, you know, you don't have no choice. So you listen to music and you read. And music, it's all different colors, people say. You know, you can come to your cousin's house and listen to Norwegian music, the last album of Rolling Stones or whatever, and then you go to another one, you listen to opera. So music, everybody talked about it, yes. And they still go on. But it doesn't, I mean, you know, the war, the Islamic repressive regime, it's something that we've been living with that for the last 30 years. But it hasn't stopped us to talk about something else.
So there was like wall-to-wall coverage of Michael Jackson's death on the... Maybe you don't know that, actually.
Not the newspapers. It's just, okay. You know...
Everyone was talking about
people, phone and everything, yeah.
Turkey, before we go to Julio, I'm pretty sure it will be the same for him, but Turkey was... Wasn't there something similar to the way Neda was talking about the reaction to the repression by having a sort of secret garden in your house? Wasn't there something that could be similar in Saudi Arabia?
From the point of Michael Jackson?
Well, not specifically Michael Jackson, but the fact that since you cannot do, there are a lot of things that you can't do outside and that you're not supposed to do.
It's everywhere. Almost most homes have something like that. They either built their own theater inside the house, they alcohol
have satellite
is forbidden.
Television and-
Oh, everybody has satellite television in Saudi Arabia. Nobody watches local channels. Everybody here has satellite TV.
Okay.
You can find on a less amount, like some people might actually have bars inside their homes or nightclubs within their homes. So you can find a lot of things. People build a lot of stuff inside their homes to do what they want.
So basically, the repression goes to the ones that don't have the money to access all these Western delicacies. I mean, so the repression goes to the poor people, and then everybody else can have inside their house, like you said, alcohol, even a discotheque.
I don't think they have poor people in Saudi Arabia.
No, we have poor people, of course. But the point is, you say oppression, and then you have to ask whether they are oppressed or not, and really comes down to who you talk to. Certainly, a majority, and I'm sure of it, would support all these oppressions because they believe in it. If I'm talking about the poor people, most of them would support it. A few would really don't like it. So really comes down, you can't generalize the word oppression, because it really comes down whether the people support it or not, the person supports this or not.
Okay.
But do you think they support it because it's the only thing they know about, or maybe they don't know what the other options are, maybe?
It's religious. They support it on a religious basis. These are mostly religious people, especially the poor, are very religious people, and they do support these things because they think it's part of their religious belief.
To have a slightly more clear vision of what the situation is in Iran in that regard, how much is forbidden in Iran? Like, can you listen to music in the street? Like, can you tell us, Neda, how oppressive it is?
We get everything. We get everything from Dubai. We get everything from Asia. I mean, the album, you can get a DVD which comes out in States or any European country. We get it a few days later. I mean, the impossible, it's possible in Iran. true, because we've got a lot of frontiers. We've got frontiers with Turkey and all the countries. But it's, you cannot sit outside and listen to music. You can buy them in, you cannot really go out there and buy the last album of all the techno or the last Ibiza, whatever. But people have them. Having said that, any minute they can come in and say, you're not allowed to have it. We can take you. The minimum freedom which is allowed, it's doubtful. You have it, but you're not allowed to have it. The cables, we're not allowed to have it. So sometimes every 6 months they come to certain areas, they take it all. And 1 week later, there we go again, paying about $300-400, buying it again. And there we go. It goes back on the back on our buildings. People read a lot. So we do get a lot of translation. Sometimes in the libraries, they come and they take it all. Everything, you're always on the doubt. Nothing right. is straight.
What about alcohol?
Of course, alcohol is not allowed. But there again, you buy it like in any Middle East country, in black market. I mean, you see, everything is there, but you're not allowed to. But there, you know, any second they can come into your house, the guy who sold it to you, who is a part of the police, they will come and take you to the prison. So, you know, I've seen that with my own eyes. So, you know, it's a permanent hypocrisy. I mean, there
is there a constant state of fear that you're actually going to go to prison, or is it just they take it from you, you pay a fine, and that's it?
Listen, it depends on the if you've got $1,000, you give it to the guy. If you don't have the $1,000 I'm talking about, well, there you go. You go into prison, but you get about 50. With your belt, when they hit it, they hit you.
Oh,
lashes.
Lashes.
Yeah. So what are you going to say to somebody who's 22 years old? You're not allowed to go without with your girlfriend. You're not allowed to go with your girlfriend. But if they want, they can ask you in the street, who is this lady? It's tolerated, and any second they can take you. And God forbid, I don't wish my worst enemy to be in the prison of Iran in Evin. Because it's terrible. I mean, you know, a lot of people every day since 30 years they've been tortured, and since Ahmadinejad for the last 2 weeks it's even worse. The journalists, the newspapers who just said no to the vote, giving your opinion, you're not allowed to. The minimum, you know, human beings' right, we're not allowed to have it.
Okay.
So it's always underground. Everything is underground.
I see. Okay, that's a tough transition to Julio, but I'm going to
Julio in Argentina, I guess. It's South America and all the...
Yeah, actually, you were telling me, Julio, that there is an election in Argentina. I don't know why I take the Spanish accent when I say it. I try to sound more authentic.
I think it sounds perfect.
I guess they haven't really been talking about, well, Michael Jackson probably, but
all the news are about Michael Jackson, because 48 hours before the election you're not allowed to make any kind of public demonstration for or against any of the parties. And if I will comment on Michael Jackson, people will probably hate me. Because, yeah, it's sad that he died, but I think it's good for music, because the Beatles song will go back to Paul McCartney.
I don't think they will go back to Paul McCartney.
Well, Yoko, no, Paul McCartney. I don't know who.
No, I think they will go to his children, to the children of Michael Jackson, and they will...
No. They are in the will that they go back to Paul McCartney.
Oh,
at least
okay.
At least that's what I heard. And that's why I said it's a good thing for music. But I don't know. I think the way the media and everyone is reacting to this is a bit hypocritical. Because, yes, he did good music in the 80s. Everybody was a fan. But then, does no one remember, for instance, all these problems he had? He was on trial to see if he had taken advantage of little kids or not. it's like this whole thing just doesn't matter anymore. And everybody is such a fan of Michael Jackson. He was a hero and whatever. I mean, we have to put it into context. Yeah, he was a pop star, but he doesn't really deserve that such a coverage. It's amazing how everyone has reacted to this. So many people watching YouTube. I think it's so hypocritical, you know? And to be honest, in the past years, he had lots of financial problems. Nobody cared about it.
I'm sorry, please finish.
And no, well, like I said, I'm going to be hated about this, but... So I won't comment anymore. It's just that when I find this thing that somebody dies, he had a long period of, with lots of problems, nobody cared. And now everybody says, oh, it's my hero. Oh, he was so wonderful. And, you know, it's so hypocritical.
No, listen, I think there's it's too bad that we don't have Scott Johnson from on the show, because he was talking about this on Twitter yesterday and got quite a bit of flack for it. But I think you have to separate the two. You have, on one side, you have the artist, and on the other side, you have the man that Michael Jackson became today. And the artist, there's no question that he was a revolutionary artist and very instrumental in changing music and music videos. And he was, I can't really think of many people who had such an impact. I don't want to say an influence, but an impact.
Patrick,
on music.
I have to agree with Julio and all what he said.
You have
a point there, but the problem is when you listen to what's the people's reaction and everything. He's my hero. He was a great man. We don't see the word he was a great artist. No, he was a great man. He was my hero, and that I cannot get. And to be honest, I didn't want to go into this. Julio had to pull me into it, because we believe that when a person dies, just rest in peace and that's it. But we don't like to talk about their what they did in their life, bad or what. So, and overall, I think they're just overblowing this whole Michael Jackson thing. It's so unbelievable the way it's covered. It's the internet almost died. I just can't understand it. He just was just some artist. I don't believe anybody else.
He wasn't just some artist.
Now we get some controversy here, Owen. from your point of view, Patrick, that you're trying to separate the person from the artist, the one who died is a person, because the artist either died 10 years ago when there was no new contributions to music, or
that's
he will still be alive, depending on how you want to look at it.
I agree. The artist did die maybe 15 years ago, and Michael Jackson, the body that
freak.
Remained, was a freak, and we all agree on that, and that's why he got so much flack for it. But that's true in theory, but you can't deny the fact that when the man actually dies, then you're going to reflect on his career and think about all that he accomplished in his career. And
you know what, look at the sales now in Amazon. Dying was the best thing that would happen to his career.
Just look at that on iTunes also. It's unbelievable. Michael Jackson is in the top. I think the last time I checked, there were 5 songs in the top 10 for him.
Yeah, I agree. It's a huge...
And you know what that means? That means lots of people from the music industry are making lots of money at the moment.
Absolutely.
That also increases all the hype in the media.
I wonder how much of that money is going to help to pay all of the debts he left behind.
I think not as much as it should, probably. All right, I guess we could talk about Michael Jackson for a while here, but...
I want to move on. I want to move on.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move on.
I want to go to France now.
What Patrick had asked me before about the elections, we have tomorrow midterm elections in Argentina, in which we select half of the seats in the lower house of the Congress and a third of the seats on the upper house. And I just wanted to short comment on this because we have so we have all these problems with elections in Iran, and we are not short of controversy as well. From here in the Netherlands, I cannot really get all the local news, but I understand there are lots of controversies. For instance, we have candidates that are on the list, you know, to be selected just for cosmetic purposes because they already have positions in the government that they are not willing to give up. That is called testimonial candidates. I was wondering if any of you had a situation like this before in your countries.
Can you explain a little bit further? I'm not sure what you're talking
about.
Well,
this means, for instance, we have a guy number one that he's already the governor of a province, but he's now in the, he's one of the candidates to be selected as a congressman. Because we don't really select the person of the Congress that goes to Congress, but we select the party, and there is a list of people, and then according to how many votes, you get more or less seats. Then this, the name of this guy, who is already governor, will, what they think is, will make people vote for that party because of the guy, but the guy will never take Congress, will never go to Congress, he will never accept the position. So his position will just go to the next one in the list that nobody knows. And for me, as when I heard about this, I was so outraged because I think it should be illegal. But that seems to be what was going on. So I wanted to know if this maybe happens in other countries as well.
Well, in France, I mean, I know we had the EU elections, which I just wanted to mention very quickly also, where, of course, you have a list of people that are on the ballot, but the one who has its their name on the ballot goes to the European Parliament. And I don't think, I might be mistaken, but I don't think that that situation specifically happens in France, the one you're talking about. And moreover, we haven't heard about the Argentinian election at all. I mean, between the situation in Iran and everything that's been happening here, it's probably understandable. But
yes, I understand. It's just a midterm election. It's not like they are electing a new president or anything. I'm going to vote tomorrow. It made it to some of the international news, for instance, The Economist or Newsweek, and what I read there. It's that basically at the moment our government is fully controlled by the official party, the one in the presidency, the Congress as well. And because with these elections, it's very likely that the government, that the Congress will not be majority of the official party anymore. There are some rumors that the president might even quit if they don't get majority because she is not willing to compromise with other parties. But that's it.
Yeah, but that it's interesting because in the EU elections, which I'm sure you heard about also, and I hope everyone heard about,
yes.
We had a pretty clear victory for the party in place in France, President Sarkozy's party, which is a right-wing party, which was very surprising because. Well, the listeners of this show know that I've been talking about strikes all the time in France and social unrest and people being really unhappy with the government. So we were expecting that the left would do a big score, but it was very, very they actually got a very weak score. And they even got, the Green Party got an almost bigger score than the left. So it was a huge surprise, and it reinforced the right-wing party, which is the one in charge, very much. And that was the big surprise in the past month for us.
But do you think Sarkozy is doing a good job in his position so far?
That's hard to say, and I think the answer is probably predicated on my political beliefs in a way, because he is bringing France more towards the center on the political world stage, and I personally think we were too much at the left, but maybe the way he's doing it is a little bit reprehensible, and I'm sure that a lot of people from the opposing political spectrum would tell you that he's doing things horribly, but
what's his deal with the whole burqa thing?
Well, okay, that's actually a different story. That's why you wanted me to go into what happened in France, Turkey?
Yeah, I want to understand this whole thing, because I don't see where the separation of religion and state comes into this. All I see is oppression.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'm sorry, I have not heard of it. Patrick, can you explain what he's talking about? Because
yeah,
I have not heard about it.
I'm going to explain, and maybe all of you can tell us what you think about this. The thing that's been happening in the past couple of weeks or 3 weeks is that some people are in the political sphere are asking, should we outlaw the burqa, which is the full Islamic veil that even covers the face? I'm sorry if I'm saying something stupid here. It's the one that they wear in Afghanistan, and under the Taliban rule, it's very it's been reported on a lot. So people have been asking, should we outlaw it outright and say that it is illegal to be worn in France and in schools specifically? And there were debates going back and forth, and finally Sarkozy said, yes, it is. He didn't declare it illegal, of course, but he said, I think it should be illegal, and it is not compatible with the values of the Republic. And the reason for this is that certain displays of religious beliefs are considered to be enforcing your beliefs to the point that it infringes on other people's freedom. That's the best way to put it.
How are you infringing on other people's freedom when you're covering yourself?
There are several issues here. The first one is that there is a question about how voluntary these practices are. And of course, I know, Turkey, you're going to say, yes, they do want to wear the veil, or they wouldn't, and it's a voluntary thing.
I'm sure, I know for a fact there are some women that would want to wear it. And I don't support the burqa. I'm completely anti-burqa. I don't believe in covering the face. But I believe it's her choice. I don't have a problem with France having a law that says that no woman should be forced to wear the burqa. That I have no problem. But to go outright and say wearing a burqa is forbidden in France, now that's complete stupidity, and that's imposing your point of view on others.
Well, I don't understand.
Wait. I don't think it's being forbidden in France to wear the burqa. What Patrick said is to be...
No, that's the law. That's a new law.
But to be in certain specific places, such as in school, for instance.
No, that's already done now. Now even hijab is not allowed in school.
And according to what you said, the burqa is...
Let's hear from Neda. She's been very quiet and very nice, letting us talk for maybe 20 minutes. Neda, do you have something to say about this?
Well, I mean, I do have, I'm in the Republic of France, and I have, if this is the law, this is the law, and I have no problem with it, you know. Wearing a burqa, not in schools, okay, I agree with it. I mean, you know, in your private life, that's whatever, you know, if you're in the street, in your house, going to France, I don't mind. Coming into the school in certain places, administration and all that,
Nida, we're not talking about that. That's already the law right now. We're talking now, Sarkozy is pushing for a law that says, even in public, you're not allowed to wear burqa, period, in France.
Okay, this is the deal, Turkey. And I think that the burqa in itself, by its nature, is oppressive. And I think it's a good thing that it should be forbidden.
Here's my opinion. You cannot force someone. Are you going to go and tell a woman who completely does it willingly and say, you know, you're oppressed. You should never wear that. And the law says you will not allow. So you're telling her that your views are better than hers and you know what's oppressive and not for her.
Yes.
And she's stupid.
Yes.
Well, Turkey, I think the burqa
I'm going to be a little bit controversial here, and I'm going to tell you I absolutely believe that as a system, we should it enters into that realm of. Of course, if one person wants to wear their hair like this or like that, of course, if you take one example, that's not going to be the case. But in the case of an institutionalized practice that is, in my opinion, I think, forced upon women, it should be a decision that we as a society make to outlaw one specific practice.
You just killed individuality. You're just killing her individuality. You're telling her you're the one who's going to tell her what to wear and not to wear.
Yes, in that specific case, doesn't she have the right to pick? I do say that I should that it should be forbidden.
How is it more stupid that France outlaws this when in other countries this is mandatory for girls to wear it?
I also believe it shouldn't be mandatory. I think it's stupid even in countries where it's mandatory.
So what you want is free choice.
Yes.
Of to wear it or not. Okay, in that case, I agree with you. And when they outlaw it, okay, Patrick, I don't think I understand correctly. Is that if a girl is wearing a burqa in the streets, she's going to get fined for that? She's going to go to jail for that?
Well, probably fined, I guess. I mean, the law hasn't been voted yet.
It should be. Well, it seems a bit extremist because it should be treated the same as a hat. You know, it's just a hat.
No, yeah.
If you want to wear it, you can. If you cannot, but in certain places, like for instance.
No, I understand. I understand this opinion completely, and I think that it's very important to preserve our individual liberties. And in 99.9% of the cases, you should be allowed to wear or not wear whatever you want. But in this specific case, I think it enters a system that is larger than just wearing a certain item of clothing. And I think in this larger context, then you shouldn't be allowed to propagate a system that is oppressive, and that we shouldn't allow an oppressive system to go on. And you're saying you know better.
Yes. Nobody knows better, Patrick. Nobody knows better.
I think in that case,
You're making the same system. You're declaring yourself as God. My religion says you should never wear burqa.
No, it's the same concept. You're twisting the argument.
Patrick.
Well, hey, let me
no,
respond.
I'm not twisting the argument. It's the same exact concept. Okay. You said that they're forced by their religion, and now you're saying, no, I'm going to force them not to wear it. So what's the difference between the two?
Because I think that in this context, it's a symptom of something different. Of course, I don't care if anyone wears anything anywhere. I could even be happy to have people walking naked in the street, whatever. But in this instance, it's a symptom of something different. And that something different is the oppression that women experience in some extremist Islamic rules. And I'm sure that you have some, I mean, if it was some sort of Catholic rule that said you have to wear that kind of clothing, and it came to the point where it became a problem in a society, I might say, yes, well, this one is a symptom of something that is too oppressive for a free republic where we have freedom to accept. So in a strange, ironic twist, indeed, you have to forbid something to preserve liberty. Yeah,
but Patrick, I think, as you said, it's mandatory in our countries, but France is supposed to be a rational country, a bastion of liberty and free choice and freedom of speech. Don't you think that if they forbid the burqa, they are putting them, it's putting France on the same level as the countries that make it mandatory?
Yeah, I think it's a very difficult situation, and the problem is, where do you draw the line? For example, well, it would go into a whole different conversation, but I think it is a problem that should be dealt with, and I don't know how to say it differently. I think it's a symptom of something bigger, and if we can fight the symptom, then.
Why don't you just fight the system by picking religious leaders who don't believe in the burqa, to talk to people, try to convince them, and educate them that this is not what is required, instead of telling people, you know what, you don't have a choice. You're going to walk without that, or you're going to go to jail.
That's actually, Turkey, I was going to say something on the same lines. I don't know if anybody else heard it, but he was coming, his sound was a bit choppy. Yes, what Turkey is saying is right. If you are going to, these girls wear it as a choice because of a religious belief, and they will feel ashamed if they cannot wear it just because of the law. Maybe the solution is not to forbid it completely, but for instance, to not allow religious schools in France, or to increase the awareness of rational thought. And you know, educate them so that they know that they don't need to feel ashamed, and that they know that they have the right to not wear it if they want to.
I think if we want to continue the conversation, it would have to go into a very religious-centric conversation, and it could go on for very long. So I'm afraid we're going to have to stop it there, because the show has already been going on for an hour and a half almost.
Didn't you say you wanted me to explode? I'm just exploding for you, Patrick, here.
Thank you so much, Turkey, for this. I'm very grateful.
Thank you so much, Patrick.
I guess we're going to wrap it up here. I guess, Neda, did you have something you wanted to add about that whole burqa thing, or is that it?
Listen, it's, you know, if it's a lot of times, a lot of women, they wear it purely, you know, provocation. You know, it's not always their faith. I'm sorry to tell you this. A lot of times they're just saying, hey, listen, I am what I am, you know. And this is because a lot of times, you know, when I walk in the streets, I talk to them. Hey, where were you born? I was born in France. Have you ever been in the Middle East? No. Do you know what it is, Islam? No, not really. They don't even know the history of Islam. It's just, you know, it's by provocation. That's what I don't respect.
Hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting way.
Putting their identity and their propaganda. If somebody's got faith, that's fair enough. You know.
A very, very interesting point to add to the... to the discussion, and I wish we had more time to actually go into it a little bit more, but too bad. We'll have to talk about this again at one point, and I'm sure we'll have the a chance to do it. We usually end the show with a funny story about that with the segment, and now for something completely different, but I don't have one today. Do any of you have a funny story to lighten the mood a little bit?
Funny story. I'm sure I have something. I just need to remember it.
your funny stories are always depressing and appalling, Turkey. So maybe we should avoid that one.
Turkey, in your funny stories, people get crucified.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, yeah, I have a funny story. That guy
got crucified. That's the fun part.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, I guess that's going to be it for us. I want to thank again everyone of you for coming on the show and for having a great conversation, and give you the opportunity to maybe pimp something that you're doing on the web. Julio, is there anything you want to tell the listeners where they can find you on the internet?
Well, as usual, I have my Twitter account, which is Aprea, A-P-R-E-A, and I have recently, I have started collaborating so far just one episode on a Spanish podcast, which the address is alternaria.tv, which I would believe it's better if you just put it on the show notes, because it might be complicated. Sure. For people,
it's a Spanish tech show, isn't it?
Let's put it. It's Spanish Buzz Out Loud.
Okay, fair enough.
But no way near the number of the audience that Tom gets. But I think the guys are doing quite well.
Okay,
and I just collaborate from time to time.
So twitter.com/aprea and
yeah.
Can you say it again?
Alternaria.
Alternaria.tv.
Yes.
Good. Turkey, how about you?
Well, people need to follow me. I'm on Twitter. My ID is Saudi. So that's twitter.com/Saudi. I need to give a shout out. Someone asked me to give a shout out. So CJ, this is a shout out for you. And one more thing, something I remembered. I had to, if Dvorak is listening to this show, Dvorak, stop telling people that you did not. Twitter was all fake because it was all in English and not in Persian about the Iranian election. It was in Persian. We just never saw the Persian tweets. That's all.
Well, I don't think that Dvorak is listening to the show, but if he is, I hope he gets the message.
Mubarak is looking at himself. once again.
Who? What?
Mubarak.
Oh no, we're talking about someone else from the tech community. Dvorak is a tech news reporter who is very angry, a little bit like Turkey.
Okay.
So, Turkey, people need to follow you, as I understand it. That's what you said, right? They need to follow you on Twitter at twitter.com/Saudi.
Yep, that's okay. Where I am.
And Neda, is there something you want to say before we close the show, a message, a place to get news, anything?
No, thank you so much, Patrick. Thank you very much for everything. It was lovely being with you. And it was very, very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Well, thank you very much for being here. And I hope you keep us informed about what happens. And everyone you know in Iran is well. And hopefully things change in the near future. So I want to thank our audience also for being here. Thanks to the chat room for soldiering on a Saturday afternoon or morning in the U.S. Thanks to everyone, Copperdome, Paga, and Kitchell, and everyone else who was here. Thanks really for being here. If you want to leave a comment on the show or see the show notes, we will have a bunch of links on the website. You can go to thephileasclub.com. If you want to send us an email, you can send an email to phileas@frenchspin.com. That's the email address to send us comments and stories you might think are interesting and stuff like that. You can also go to the iTunes page on the Phileas Club and leave us reviews. We appreciate them, and they help us have a little bit more visibility in the iTunes music store. That's always good. And finally, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/notpatrick. So thanks again, everyone, and we will talk to you next month. Bye.
Bye.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.